Chapter 2. Portraits of Our Village Folk. Abandoned villages in border areas were usually seized by new settlers almost immediately after Poland became occupied. These were mainly poor families from Zakrzewo, Linia, Wiśniewo, and from Pawłowice, which took over households in Popowo, Bukowina, Piaski, and Siemirowice. There happened to be a few households in which the German owners decided to stay, but over time they were forced to leave. A common practice was that newcomers moved into German estates and waited for the owners to leave, making their life as miserable as they possibly could. Large land properties, together with the surrounding facilities and manorial farms, were taken over by the management of state estates. And under the direction of the so-called Zespół from Lomborg, state-owned farms began to be established. In this way, the villages Okalice, Wobunia, Osowo, Oskowo, Kremkowice, and Uśnieńko with Uśnieńko were transformed into state-owned agricultural holdings. The estate in Maszewo remained under the control of one manager, and together with the compressed yeast factory, the estate in Maszewo was controlled separately with the compressed yeast factory. The railway stations at Lomborg, Savica, and Maszewo were at that time overrun with people arriving by trains from the east, also forced to leave their homes and farms. If they somehow managed to survive the travel, they came only with a few belongings, and sometimes with animals. Several families were accommodated in one house, and after some time they were separated and transferred to different housing, usually former German estates. Their first days after arriving were extremely difficult for them. They lived on temporary farms. In order to survive, they were expected to cultivate the parcels allocated to them, but they had no tools, no agricultural machinery, and no seeds. There was nothing. The case of displaced people from Korczmin and of Tomaszów-Lubelski district was a typical one. In 1947, they were settled in Kremkowice and Krawica, which was called at that time Żnia Senia, the hill, after German Gerhardshohe. The arrivals were quickly relocated in grange buildings, and small land parcels lying within the estate of Count den Osten were given to them as tenancy. Those who lived on the hill were then employed by several families on large German farms. Among the abandoned estates, there were those previously belonging to Richard Wenske, 65 hectares, Gustav Mansk, 39 hectares, Kurt Zastrow, 38 hectares, Ewald Szymanke, 47 hectares, and a few smaller households, which were more or less 20 hectares. Most of them had already been plundered. There was no agricultural machinery, and horses were needed. In the case of those families, help arrived from local neighbor Karl Alf from Vorposten, the present-day Kremkowo. He had been a landowner on 60 hectares of land that had been handed down from father to son for generations. Alf helped newcomers sow and cultivate their lands. The farm machinery he used was so advanced that even those who had possessed a successful farm in Korczmin had never seen it before. Life in the rural community was based on cooperation and mutual help. Such a situation lasted, however, only until 1950, when the authorities forced them to leave the estates in Kremkowice, establishing state-owned farms there being subject to one major state-owned holding in Wobunia. Once again, the families from Korczmin had to live together, this time in the village of Savica. They were allocated households previously owned by Germans, already seized and then abandoned by Poles who were looking for a different place to live. Most of these farmings had been plundered. In addition, while deploying people onto these lands, the authorities were reluctant to give them access to the forests, which legally were part of the estates. It happened frequently that forest areas were not included in the Land Tenure Acts. Due to people's opposition, the authorities promised to give those areas to settlers. However, this never happened. After some time, new acts were formed on the basis of new measurements, which completely excluded farmers from having any property rights over forests, which became state-owned. The relocation of people from Kremkowice to Savica went without any problems. New authorities encouraged settlers to move out by reimbursing their travel costs and allowing farmers to choose the land. From the available historical documents, we assume that initially settlers had more opportunities and seemingly were granted selected lands and households according to their requests. The following request letter exemplifies a commonly applied procedure. J. A. Savica, 29th September 1950, Kremkowice. Gmina Siewica, Powiat Lęborz, Commune of Siewica in the Lęborz District. To the Executive Office of the Lęborz County Council, through Local Council in Siewica, request. I, the undersigned J.A., request the Commission to grant me a farm lying within Siewica region used previously by Jan Adamek, covering 15 hectares, in exchange for the former land in Krumkowice, which was taken away from me under new regulations in favor of state-owned agricultural holding, PGR, from Obunia. The reason I request this is that I am a farmer and the area would be the most appropriate for me in terms of my profession. Signed, J.A. After no more than 20 days, the farmer was notified that his request was approved, and in 10 days he was to take over the area legally. 28th October 1950, Siewica. The Board of the Local Council in Siewica. The Protocol on the Transfer of Rights over the Farmland in reference to Adamek Jan, relinquishing his rights of use over land. The Board of the Local Council in Siewica, acting on the basis of the decision made by the Board of Powiat Council in Lęborz and the directive dated 18 October 1950, the land number, represented by the person of XXPGRN, received from Adamek Jan, the farmland in the presence of K.A., the region administrator, as well as O.M., in its present condition specified as follows. 1. Land. Total area. 13.49 hectares. Including 12 hectares of arable land, sown to rye on 3.5 hectares. Number 2. Buildings and facilities. Current state. The house, average. The barn, average. Pigsty and cowshed, poor. Number 3. Livestock and stores. Current state. Seed drill, average. Grain mill, average. Plow, poor. 3 shovel plow and 1 coulter, poor. Straw cutter, average. 300 kilogram scale, average. The chest of Swedish turnip, poor. Seed drill, poor. Farm sled, poor. 1 dead horse. Notes, etc. Signatures. On 6th of December, the farmer provided the confirmation of his moving into Siewica. Statement. This is to certify that J.A., resident in Krumpiahowice, Gmina, Siewica, took over the farmland in Siewica, covering 13.49 hectares, including 12 hectares of arable land and 1.49 hectares of forest area, which means he took over 6 hectares of cropland and 6 hectares of unfarmed land. Accordingly, the above-mentioned J.A. has already moved in onto the household taken from Jan Adamek. 6th of December, 1950, Siewica, the village administrator, Gmina Siewica. A totally different fate awaited a settler named Z, who left his home village in Hrubieszów in Lubelski Voivodeship in 1951. According to the description of his property presented in historical records, he left a residential house roofed with slate, a barn and a cowshed covered with straw, a concrete well, and a brick-built cellar. Additionally, there were over 5 hectares of land and orchards. All this was listed and verified by a representative of the government arranging the resettlement. As far as movable property, they brought 3 horses, 4 head of cattle, and 1 pig, and 40 poultry, which was a lot compared with other relocated people. Z and his wife also brought some furniture, 2 beds, a sofa, a table, chairs, benches, cupboard, and 5 chests, and some tools, a cart, harrows, a plow, and a cultivator. As far as food supplies, they had 75 quintals of cereal, 10 quintals of root crops, and 100 quintals of hay and straw. With all these belongings, he settled on 8.5 hectares of land in Wabunia in June 1951. In the farm buildings, he found a motorbike, a cutter, a digger, a shovel plow, a pump, a grain mill, and a 2-furrow plow. All buildings were solid and with good slate roofs, while the residential house was large and convenient. There is no historical evidence for a reason that could explain why Z was arrested. He was imprisoned for a long time. His wife once wrote a request in 1952 to release him. 7th December, 1952, Wabunia. Request of Z, I, the wife of the arrested Z, Z, a resident of Wabunia, Gmina Savitsa, Powiat Lomborg, Commune of Savitsa in the Lomborg District. To the Executive Ossif of Lomborg County Council, I am asking you to request the people's authority to release my husband Z, who was arrested. What should I do with the farmland? I have a crippled arm. I am alone, and I can neither work nor look after the animals. As evidence, I submit a medical certificate confirming my health condition. Since I am not able to run the farm, I am asking you to release my husband at least to manage the household. Otherwise, I am about to leave the land to move over to my sister in central Poland. Z.I. He was kept in prison for some time. His debts were growing. The farmland was looked after by two tenants. At last, documents arrived from his previous residence which proved that he was a war veteran. This implied that he was exempt from paying some taxes, and as a government-mandated resettler, he didn't have to pay off the land he was granted. But more important fact was that he had been resettled because of the exchange of land sections adjacent to border areas between Polish Republic and the USSR. However, payment requests were still arriving. The debt was increasing. Finally, the man decided to write a letter. 18th of December, 1959, Wabunia, ZZ Wabunia Powiat Lomborg. The Executive Office of Lomborg County Council, the Agricultural Department in Lomborg. In 1951, I was resettled from the village of Z in Powiat Hrubieszów because of USSR seizure over those lands. I left there 5.18 hectares of land and household buildings. Therefore, I got the farm in Wabunia as compensation for the lost ownership. Although I have been exempted from paying PFZ tax, I am still getting orders for payment all the time. I am asking you to regulate that issue so that no enforcement procedure will be started. Besides, I am a part of the military resettlement program. ZZ. On the 9th of July, 1960, ZZ received a document from the Board of Powiat Council refusing to recognize him a military settler, thus also to suspend his payments on the grounds that he settled in the western territories of Poland. On the 9th of July, 1960, ZZ received a document from the Board of Powiat Council refusing to recognize him a military settler, thus also to suspend his payments on the grounds that he settled in the western territories of Poland in 1951, while he should have settled in 1948. In addition, the board claimed that he was obliged to pay for the household as it was not his ownership but only a tenancy. But Z could not have moved to Wabunia in 1948, as he was forced to leave his estate only in 1951 as a result of territory exchange between Poland and USSR. In 1958, his young wife died, leaving him alone with three children, no money, and huge debts. On May 30th, 1965, after a long battle, Z finally got from the management of Gdańsk a verification of his documents, attesting that he was a member of ZBOVID, the Society of Fighters for Freedoms and Democracy. Local authorities eventually canceled his debts to the state. The debts to the state were canceled, but those to the neighbors, especially the tenants, were not subject to any redemption. He lost his estates due to legal actions against him, being condemned to rent a flat if he wanted to stay. He wandered around from place to place. It did not help to write requests to the Prime Minister, Józef Sierankiewicz. There was no response. Vincenti and Danuta Borutz married in 1886, and the local church in Wiązowinica, near Jarosław in the lands of Galicia. It was the same church in which they were baptized as children, in which their children, Janek, Jadwiga, Mateusz, and Hanna, were baptized as well. They had a large piece of fertile land stretching between the village and the bend of the San River. They were quite wealthy people, deemed by others as a respectable and quite religious family. Their children were raised in true godliness and respect and honor for Franz Joseph I, Emperor of Austria and Hungary. These were not calm times, but at the time it was mainly the emperor and other political or wealthy people who had to deal with the situation, rather than ordinary people. In Wiązownica, people were concerned mainly with crops. The water level in the River San, quarreling with the hired Ruthenians who helped with the maize harvest, or with the Jewish traders who tended to cheat. Vincenti and Renata lived peacefully. They didn't have to worry about who was going to take over their household since they had two hard-working sons. In accordance with the tradition, the oldest son was to inherit the estate. Therefore, they were absolutely sure that Janek, their elder son, was to stay with them no matter what would happen. Nevertheless, life can be very uncertain and things happen unexpectedly. At the age of 18, Yannick decided to become a priest. However, the Boruts were proud that their son would be a clergyman. Having a priest in the family gave them the right to sit in the first row in the church. And anyway, there was another son. Meanwhile, the political situation in Europe started to become complicated. The emperor decided on military mobilization, and the younger son, 21-year-old Mateusz, was suddenly recruited into the Austrian army, where people looked down on those who were of Polish, Jewish, and Czech origin. Both Austrian and Hungarian officers took every opportunity to display their superiority. However, Mateusz was a handsome boy who spoke several languages and people liked him very much. Therefore, he quite enjoyed being in the army and thought about entering the officer's school in the future. Unfortunately, after the assassination in Sarajevo in 1914, followed by the outbreak of the Great War, an unfortunate accident halted all plans for the future when Mateusz was rendered deaf by a bomb explosion. When he returned home, many things had changed. His youngest sister had joined the order, which really was no surprise, as everybody expected that. Yannick stayed in the order while his sister Jadwiga ran the household. Jadwiga was a very kind and good person. She took care of her brother with great attention. Under her care, he was able to reconcile himself a bit with his disability. Over time, he learned to lip-read, which gave him some independence. However, he wasn't happy staying isolated at home. Although he was not a burden for anybody in the family, he decided to leave and go north. The new situation in post-war Europe, the creation of the Polish state, and general post-war reconstruction made it easier to find a job. He arrived at Chełmno, a beautiful old town on the Vistula River. It was an ideal place to stay for a while, but Mateusz stayed there for good. One Sunday morning, he met Maria Majewska, who lived in a neighboring village. Her parents had a household adjacent to the Vistula Bank. Maria and Mateusz married after 6 months. Mateusz worked on building sites and helped her parents with farming. Then their children were born, Wojciech, Staszek, and then Wojciech. It became crowded in the old house, and it turned out that Maria was going to have another child. They started to look for a larger place to live, and there a miracle happened. Nobody expected that the Austrian government would pay a compensation to Mateusz for the lost hearing. The government paid him a large amount of money, which Maria and Mateusz used to buy land with buildings in Starogród. Today is one of Chełmno's districts. Soon after giving birth to their fourth son, Tomasz, they moved into their new household. Unfortunately, their happiness did not last long. After 4 years, Maria got ill and suffered from tuberculosis, which was an incurable disease at that time. As if this were not enough, she became pregnant once again. 10 months after giving birth to their daughter, Bogusława, Maria died. Mateusz had to take care of 5 children. The oldest son was 7 years old, while the youngest daughter was only 10 months. Mateusz couldn't afford to feel sorry for himself. He had heard earlier that a new town near Gdańsk called Gdynia was being built and had a port. People spoke about great governmental investments in the infrastructure of that place. One could earn a lot of money there, especially in transport work. Mateusz came to an agreement with his family about leaving Władek and Wojciech in Wioznowice under the care of his sister Jadwiga. Jadwiga's son and his wife also helped in looking after the boys. They had a good life there. Władek went to school and helped with the household, while Wojciech was always full of new ideas, not necessarily connected with his duties of grazing the castle. Władek went to school and helped with the household, while Wojciech was always full of new ideas, not necessarily connected with his duties of grazing the cattle. He was also very impatient and absent-minded. The cattle grazing was not an easy task. Land parcels were small, only a few meter wide, and it was extremely hard to guard the animals, particularly since Wojciech was only 7 years old and he often went swimming in the river Seine during his duties. Such days always ended in whipping or not being allowed by Aniela, Jadwiga's daughter, to have supper. Fortunately, Aunt Jadwiga made sure Wojciech did not go to bed hungry. Staszek and the youngest son, Tomasz, were sent to their uncle Yannick in Chojnice, who had been a priest once, but then left the order for a woman. He got married, and with his wife Janina, they ran a restaurant in Chojnice. They both worked hard, and the business was prospering. The only thing they wanted was to have children. Unfortunately, their children soon died after birth, 8 of them. One by one. People gossiped about God's alleged punishments, but later it turned out that blood conflict was to blame. Yannick and Janina adopted the children of Mateusz willingly. Yannick always recognized them as family members, while Janina treated them as her workforce. Tomasz had to learn very early how to wash up, and he was so young that he had to stand on the table to reach the sink. Mateusz's daughter Bogusława was sent to his youngest sister Hania, who took the girl to the Congregation of the Sisters of Merciful God in Warsaw, which ran a school for orphans. There she received a strict and moral upbringing, but also a peaceful childhood and good education. Mateusz repaired the cart, bought two massive horses, sold the household in Starogród, then said a prayer upon Maria's grave, and left for Gdynia brokenhearted. There was a lot of work in Gdynia. People enjoyed high earnings, especially those with their own means of transport, who could work as delivery men. The majority of workers were Kashubians, who commuted from adjacent villages every day. There were also newcomers like Mateusz, who found a place to stay in Gdynia. Although lodging was expensive and fees for stables and food for horses were high, it was possible to save money. The work was well organized. Roads were broad, and there was plenty of room, which was very important for Mateusz, who could hear neither approaching vehicles nor screaming drivers. He had to be focused all day long not to cause an accident. The first day, he promised himself to earn as much as possible in order to buy a new household for his family. He dreamed about having all his children back. This thought accompanied him all the time, and the only comfort he had was that they were with his families. Mateusz rented a small flat in Obuje. The apartment was very shabby, but it was very cheap and was located in close proximity to his workplace. There was a stable nearby so he could check on his horses frequently. The horses worked hard as well from early morning until late at night, as Mateusz also took extra work. He was very exhausted, but each passing month he was putting aside more and more money. In his dreams, he saw his new house in Wiązownica and his children living there. One day he read in a local newspaper about land available for Gdynia workers. The land lay in Obuje Dolna between Old Obuje and Oksywie and was repurchased from the Tillman family. Workers who were hired at building sites or in the port could buy a parcel of land there. If they could not afford it, there was an opportunity to purchase the land on an installment basis. Mateusz did not hesitate. He saw a great chance for him and for his children. He could work and live there, and the children could go to the local school. 2 days later, he was a happy owner of the 12th parcel. The district was called Obuje Kolonia. He immediately began construction of his house. Every day after work, he returned to his land to continue building. Like him, others on adjacent parcels put their own dreams into practice with great commitment and energy. Sometimes they would gather at Mateusz's plot to share opinions about the political situation. Mateusz was a well-read person, so they wanted to know his views on what was happening. It was his habit to read newspapers, not only Jenik Bałtycki, but also Danziger Zeitung, so he had extensive knowledge about what was going on. Newspapers wrote about political tensions, the so-called political wrangling, and spread alarm among the people. However, nobody believed that there would be a war, since Western states ensured Poland about its safety and their support in case of conflict. Nevertheless, when military craft appeared in the port of Gdynia near the newly built breakwater, fear grew. By this time, his house had a roof and one room in which Mateusz lived. It was only a few months away from completion. Mateusz bought a table, chairs, and two beds with a straw mattress, a chest for clothes, and a box for food storage. He planned to send his children to local school in 1939. His daughter Bogusia was about to start at primary school. He also expected his sister Jadwiga to come and help him at the beginning. She had not actually promised to do that, but Mateusz inferred from her letters her goodwill and true attachment to the boys. She was certainly not indifferent to their fate and couldn't imagine life without them. The only thing that troubled him was whether he would be able to restore good relations with them after such a long time. He wondered whether they would talk to him, whether they would understand why he had left them, etc. One day, when Mateusz came back home after work, he noticed a few soldiers walking around the square. When he approached the place, he saw them hiding anti-aircraft guns. He didn't know yet that these guns would be a real curse for the residents of this district. Jadwiga dissuaded him from taking the children to Gdynia. Bad news about the oncoming war preparations in Gdańsk and in its surrounding areas were reaching people from all sides, so they decided to wait. On September 1st, Mateusz was awakened by the same sort of booms, vibrations, and rumblings he had already known from his past experience in the Austrian army. He looked out the window and saw flashes of light and smoke in the air hovering over the Westerplatte, a Polish military base. He harnessed his horses and went to work, but there was no work that day. The military sunk several warships in the port entry, and all work was suspended. Every day, Mateusz checked whether work was resumed, but nothing changed for a whole week. On September 8th, German fighter planes appeared, and the anti-aircraft guns hidden in Obuja were used for the first time. The return fire seemed to deter the enemy. Townspeople in Gdynia admired the success of the action, until the next day, when German bombers returned. Mateusz was going to the port as usual to check the situation, when suddenly from Holonia's side, the junkers from the base in Dziwnów emerged from the sky. They were targeting the naval port in Oksywia, but the first bombing came upon the parcels in Obuja, where the anti-aircraft guns were located, everything covered with smoke there. Mateusz ran back home. When he came closer, despite the thick smoke, he managed to see burning houses. In the place where his house used to stand, only the top wall was still there. The roof collapsed, while the side wall of the building had fallen onto the wooden cart. Nearby, the horses were lying, one dead and the other died soon after. Mateusz lost everything in one moment. His dream about having his family together ended as well. Only later did he realize that it could have been God who had saved him and his children. Jadwiga had insisted that the children stay where they were while he himself left his house about half an hour before the air attack. Germans began to divide up the population in occupied Gdynia. People were gathered on the square in front of the railway station in order to segregate them. Only people who spoke German could stay. The majority were forced to leave. Mateusz did not reveal that he knew German well. Besides, he was deaf, so he would be useless anyway. There was also a risk of being sent to Stutthof, a Nazi concentration camp 36 kilometers from Gdańsk, where all disabled people were killed immediately. Mateusz took the clothes chest and the box, the only things that survived the bombing, and went by train to Wjazownica. After the German attack on the Soviet Union, the situation in Poland was extremely tense. He got a small room in the complex of the monastery and a job as a gardener. As a gardener and a resident, he could move freely on the estate. He used the monastery's cart to deliver vegetables to the market. After the war ended, Mateusz had to stay in the monastery. His oldest son, an AK, Polish Home Army, member, didn't surrender his weapons, but stayed in the forest where he took part in fighting against the newly established People's Militia by the communist leadership. So both he and his father were wanted by the new communist government. Nothing really happens by chance. The ground floor of Wobunia Castle was full of political prisoners. The arrested were kept in the crowded and dark rooms. Having been recognized as people's enemies, they were undernourished and severely affected by hunger and disease. The vitamin C deficiency usually resulted in scurvy. Those who stayed in cellars with barred windows looking out onto the monastery's garden were luckier. A certain man with bright eyes threw vegetables into the cellars every day. He never said a word to them, just gave them food and disappeared. The arrested knew he couldn't see them as it was dark in cellars, but they never figured out that he was deaf. Wojciech, the son of Mateusz, a few years after the war, when he lived with his wife and two sons in Savica in Pomerania, once went to Lublin to bring his father to live with him. But he refused to go, not wanting to be a burden for him, especially since Tomasz had just begun his studies in medicine, thanks to the rector of the academy. His applications had already been rejected twice. Besides, Mateusz and his son Władek, though missing, were still sought after by strange people in long coats and hats on their heads. At last, after Stalin's death, Mateusz was persuaded to go to Savica. He took a few pieces of furniture, the same chest and wicker basket, and went to live with Tomasz on the upper floor. His children used to visit him from time to time, but the relations were not easy. They blamed him for a wasted childhood, and he did not deny it. He truly thought he could have done more and looked at his own life as wasted and worthless. He saw nothing positive in it and nothing he could be proud of. It was 1984. In his son's house, Wojciech's daughter was getting married. Among the guests there was an old and elegant man, the groom's uncle. He was a retired teacher from a secondary school in Poznan. He did not participate in the dancing. Years spent in Stalinist prisons had damaged his health, so he talked a little to people. He had a drink and was carefully watching the bride's grandfather. He already knew that he was deaf and saw how effectively he communicated with the family by lip reading. He felt he should speak to him, so he asked the bride's brother to be a middleman. "I have an impression that we have already met," he stated. "I don't think so. I don't remember you, sir," answered Mateusz, looking at the man carefully. They exchanged glances, and after a while, the guest recognized the same clear eyes he saw while being imprisoned. "I know! Weren't you in Lublin after the war?" he asked. No, I have never been there. Mateusz began to look for his walking stick to go up. It was you who threw fresh vegetables into cellars. I know it was you. I would recognize you anywhere. Do you know how many people survived thanks to your help? I don't remember anything like that. I didn't do anything like that. Now I'm going to have a rest. Excuse me. Excuse me. Mateusz tried to squeeze through to reach the door. Only now I know why he never spoke to us. He could neither see nor hear us, but we thought he was afraid to talk to us, he said to the bride's brother, who didn't understand anything, so the guest told him the whole story. There are as many stories as there are people who came to Savitsa after the war. All of them were ordinary men, deceived by the authorities, and whose lives were destroyed. Humble heroes, not realizing it. They live or have lived until recently next to each other. There are also those who have had no such experiences. To which category of people belongs the person who wrote this letter? 26th of February, 1951. Shemirovice. T.P. Shemirovice Gmina Savitsa. Powiat Lemberg. To the President of National Council in Savitsa. I am requesting you to give me a farm lying in the village Shemirovice Gmina Savitsa, belonging to T.W., covering 13.12 hectares of land, including 9.44 of arable farming. The reason for my request is as follows. I have a large family living on a too small area of land, considering the number of residents. The arable farm I have is only 8.51 hectares, and this is only category 5 and 6, which means I have to buy bread every year. So I would like to take over the adjacent farm where now T.W. lives and does nothing to cultivate his farm and keep it profitable. If you grant his land to me, it will be cultivated while me and my family will make a living from it. And what is most important, the state will not have to grant investment loans. I am looking forward to your response, hoping that my request will be approved. T.P. For reasons of the economic development of the Polish People's Republic, the request was accepted. Chapter 3. Portrait of Our Fears. There are a number of mysteries never solved in our gmina. People sometimes see a person, or rather a shadow of a person, wandering the field road in Pieski in the late evening. It may be the spirit of someone once hurt, or someone who did harm and now cannot find rest. The entity has neither limbs nor a head, but only a glowing red light somewhere in the middle, which resembles the end of a burning cigarette. People see it moving along the field road and up the asphalt road to the road sign. The specter has been appearing since the war. People associate the phenomenon of that of a German soldier killed there in 1945 by Russians, who is alleged to have been laying there for a few days without any burial. Parts of his uniform and his clothes were scattered around him, while in his hand he was holding an unfinished cigarette. Those who encountered the specter avoid using that road, though people believe nothing bad can happen if you do not speak to it. In the spring, when it is calm and quiet, one can hear a splash in the river Struga in Kremkovice near the Świętopełek tree, exactly where the old mill used to stand. The splash resembles the sound of falling water on the rotating wheel. But the mill and the wheel ceased to exist a long time ago. Some people believe it is Miller Boggs who was murdered by Russians trying to mill the grain. Some people claim they are observed while passing by the old cemetery in Wobunia. They instinctively hurry past, feeling the invisible watcher's eyes on their back. The phenomenon has been observed for at least 50 years, and it is told by the eldest in the village of Osovo, who used to go by the cemetery when returning from Wobunia. Nothing bad has ever happened to those passing by besides the feeling of heat or cold, depending on the way people responded to fear. Anyway, people use vehicles today, and nobody walks that way anymore. An instance happened sometime around 1990, when a resident of Maszewo drove a woman home to Wobunia. She had been helping his wife bake a cake for a family ceremony. When they reached her house, she went off while the man returned home. He passed by the church and the roadside chestnuts and then accelerated to pass the cemetery as quickly as he could. While going by, a field stone hit the driver's door. From the noise, he assumed the stone must have been heavy, at least 2 kilograms. The impact was so strong that the car got swung as if from a sudden gust of wind. He instinctively looked at his watch. It was midnight. He didn't stop, but sped up. He thanked God the stone didn't hit the window. Believing that the car must have been damaged, he checked it in Osovo in a well-lit place. He stopped the car to see what had happened, but there was no sign of damage. The next day, he checked the car in the garage to exclude the possibility of running over a rock. But everything was all right. The next time he happened to return from Kartuzy through Wobunia, he chose the road through Savitsa. He told the story to several people, and it turned out that others had experienced similar incidents, also at midnight. These events cannot be explained rationally. One may presume that some ghost bears resentment towards drivers. But why? In the village of Pieski, near the paved road that runs upwards, from which people can see other neighboring villages and a small but charming lake, there is a place that draws people's attention. There are ruins of old buildings covered with bushes, the grim basement window sockets looking at the road, as well as a parking square for farming carts that was once bustling and crowded. The place is surrounded from both sides by two ponds, probably very deep since they have never been covered by algae. There was an inn which stood in the past that belonged to Berthold Muschiel. The place was once very popular and always crowded with people. Despite the fact that the village was full of taverns where villagers could have a drink, here was where one could also do the shopping. In the large courtyard, in the shadows of towering trees, the owner put concrete water troughs so that the visitors could tie and water their horses while they spent time drinking inside. The inn was located near the Polish border, therefore the traffic was greater than anywhere else in the village. The place was remembered for another attraction, Barthold's beloved daughter, 20-year-old Lily. She was his pride and joy, a merry, strong, and hard-working person. She used to help her father while serving the guests. Some of them chose Barthold's inn only because of her, wanting to see his beautiful daughter. She was admired by Polish boys from villages surrounding Krzeszewo and Pawłowice, and German men from Schimmerwitzwald. They would stare at her while sitting in the inn. Even the local accordion busker played a song called Lily Marlin. In 1945, when the war was ended, those boys who had been too young to participate in the war now loved to shoot the targets with a gun they found. It was the most fun to have a girl as a spectator. This is what was happening in the summer of 1945 in front of the inn. Lily's brother and a Polish boy, whose adoration she seemed to reciprocate, were targeting a tree in the driveway. There were some other friends accompanying them along with the Polish boy's brother. They were taking turns shooting, and all of them were failing to hit the target. Lily enjoyed the show, teasing one boy who had been boasting about being a skillful shooter. "You are such a fine shooter that I wouldn't be afraid to stand as a target under that tree. It would be a shame if I hit you." "But you can't. Shoot. Here I am." He didn't try to target her, but the bullet went into her breast. Although she lived for a while after being transported to the hospital in Lomborg, she eventually died. On the day of her funeral, she was lying in the coffin in a room full of people. The candles were burning. The poor, foolish boy, who with one stupid deed destroyed the lives of the girl and his own, did not come. Her father appeared only for a while, looking at his daughter's face without shedding a tear, then left, disappearing forever. Nobody knew what happened, where he went, whether he killed himself or took revenge. It is said that he was buried somewhere in the big forest, Dujelas, but nobody knows the exact place of his burial. A few days after the war ended, Lily's family left for Germany. For some reason, the house has never had new owners. Everyone moved out. People say that at dusk or late at night, one can encounter a young woman and a man walking the paved road. Both of them tend to look carefully at anyone passing by, and then they disappear. There is no need to be afraid of them, I think. The one who shot Lily died a long time ago. He was heading back from a wedding ceremony, fell down and died. His brother was driving a cart shortly after that, and the vehicle overturned and crushed the driver's body. He died on the spot as well. There have been other strange incidents. For instance, travelers have experienced the loss of pressure in tires when driving the road, or a person who was going with a pig to the market early in the morning told how the wagon with the pig suddenly disconnected without explanation. It was near the inn, but all this could have happened by coincidence. The place near the Maszewo Wood, near the cross where Ogrodowa Street begins, is haunted by ghosts. In the past, it was a roadside hedge. Regularly trimmed, it used to protect the road against the snow. After World War II, the hedge was neglected, and it transformed into woods consisting of gigantic beeches. Now it serves as a dating spot for young people who look for a calm and isolated place. Piles of empty bottles seem to have made the ghost disappear, or perhaps they are still there but hidden. What ghost would try to haunt a drunk teenager? But at the time of seven-year primary schools, the place was indeed haunted. People saw white lights or shadows there. They unanimously claimed to have seen a white figure. Although many people experienced the presence of the ghost, no ghost has ever been reported as aggressive. But people were afraid to go that way in the dark. It was a common practice that, when a person was coming back home late, Someone had to go out to bring the person home. Usually they met in Maszewo holding flashlights. In the early 1960s, Polish TV broadcasted only one program. The transmission began about 9 p.m., and children could watch the evening bedtime cartoon, Golska Balbinka, or Jacek and Agatka. These adults watched the news, a Russian production movie, and about 10 p.m. everybody went to bed. Only when the Russian Song Festival was transmitted from Zielona Góra did the program last until 11 p.m. There are only three TV sets in Maszewo. Two of them were owned by some residents, one on Ogrodowa Street, while one was in the common room of the yeast factory near the library. All of these places were always crowded. People used to come early and find seats before the transmission started, so it was hard to find even a place to stand. Some people took their own chair with them to watch TV. Private homes were also full of guests, though these were usually family friends. A local postmaster used to watch TV every day at his friend's in Ogrodowa Street. Normally, he tried to be back home after the news, as he didn't want to impose himself on them or to pass the infamous wood late in the night, though he didn't believe in ghosts. Only sometimes did he watch half of the film. Once, he fell asleep on a chair, and when he woke up, it was completely dark outside. He had to go home whether he wanted to or not. When he was approaching the wood, he started to hum something to stop thinking. Suddenly, a white specter with dark eye sockets came out of the bushes. It was dark, but it looked to him as if the figure was pulsing in its middle, expanding and contracting. The invisible eyes of the specter were watching the postmaster carefully, as if suggesting that no human presence was welcome. The man knew he had to leave the place as quickly as he could, so he ran like lightning, breaking the record in the 400 meters. It would seem it was the last encounter with the ghost at the wood, but the incidents contributed to the appearance of more TV sets in Maszewo. The postmaster also bought one for himself. In this way, the percentage of those who possessed TV increased by 25%. Witold Broda. Some people's and places' names have been intentionally changed.